Good afternoon. It's Friday, the 21st of September 2018, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish. We're delighted to be joined by David Scott with Northern Exposure. David, of course, north of the border, and also David Ellis, Strategic Defence Initiatives. I think we've got a particularly powerful news today, having a look at everything Brexit to what's really going on behind the scenes in matters of security.
We're going to start off with Brexit, and I thought we would just watch Theresa May's speech following the Salzburg, it was being described as an informal heads of government meeting. It took her a long time to get to the point, so as we'll see in a second.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. We've had a productive summit here in Austria. There was a good discussion over dinner yesterday about tackling the generational challenge that is posed by migration, on which the UK is committed to working closely with the EU both now and in the future. And in particular, I spoke about what more could be done to eliminate people trafficking and the vile adverts that are being put online to lure migrants into making perilous journeys. And the UK will be at the forefront of efforts to ensure that social media can never be a platform for this appalling crime. We had a session this morning on internal security, where I gave an update on Salisbury. I thanked EU leaders for their strong response to this reckless and criminal act by two officers of the Russian GRU. And this sends a very strong message on our collective determination to defend the international rules-based system. This informal council has also been an opportunity to discuss our Chequers proposals directly with EU leaders. I've just had a frank bilateral meeting with President Tusk. He's confirmed the commitment of the other 27 member states to reaching a deal as soon as possible. But there are two key issues we need to resolve. We both agree there can be no withdrawal agreement without a legally operative backstop. But that backstop cannot divide the United Kingdom into two customs territories. And we will be bringing forward our own proposals shortly. On the economic partnership, there is no solution that will resolve the Northern Ireland border which is not based on the frictionless movement of goods. Our white paper remains the only serious and credible proposition on the table for achieving that objective. So there's a lot of hard work to be done, but if the political will is there on the other side, I'm confident we will reach a deal. And to do so is in the EU's interests as well as the UK's. Laura?
So she went straight to Laura Kunzberg there, of course, because where else would you go but the BBC for first questions? But as you can see, she is suggesting that there are a couple of problems with Brexit, Brian, the mainstream media today suggesting that this is a disaster for Theresa May, that we're heading towards a no-deal Brexit, and the media attempting to ramp this up as being some kind of really serious situation that there can be no recovery from. In fact, all I see here is negotiating positions being laid out. There's going to be, well, we'll come on to what Donald Tusk said in a couple of minutes and try to get a little bit of perspective on this.
Can I just say, I'm nearly speechless, Mike. This such a poor speech. She is not talking, she's not using her mind to tell you what's in her mind and what she thinks. She's simply repeating a speech as best she can with an air of theatrical performance. There's no sincerity. This is simply repeating a statement. They could just have her as a spokeswoman for the deep state. I'm not sure I'm getting over what I see, but really it's vacuous nothingness coming out of this woman. She is simply reading a script.
Well, it's interesting you say all that because it's going to become clear in a second why that's important. But before we get on to Donald Tusk, I just wanted to highlight this because at the end, and in fact, a couple of points during the speech, we see this. I mean, I don't know, what is this? This is like a Hillary Clinton-esque kind of nervous tick here, Brian. I think she knows very well these are not her words. These are somebody else's words that she's reading. Yeah. And she's getting pretty stressed about it.
I think stress is the word. I'm going to say I believe what we're looking at is cognitive dissonance. she's pushing out words that she doesn't actually believe inside. But also, we know that inside Westminster, they are using applied behavioural psychology to get the message over through departments. And also, we've now got 185 British MPs apparently unable to cope with the job in a mental sense, and they are being reframed using mindfulness. I think we're starting to see the breakdown of Theresa May, and as you say, Mike, this is a repeat of Hillary Clinton.
Let's welcome David Ellis to the programme. David, what are your thoughts on this?
Thanks, guys. Yeah, she's a really poor actor. And that begs the question as to why she's there in the first place. Because if we'd got a coherent minister there, prime minister, what it would demonstrate is the modus operandi of this thing that we're supposed to be dealing with, which is it's got the Zumzirksen manual in overdrive here, what they're dealing with. And we don't even have any kind of credible representation there in this ball pit at all. She's completely incoherent. It's obvious.
Absolutely. Well, look, let's see what Donald Tusk had to say.
Everybody shared the view that while there are positive elements in the Chequers proposal, the suggested framework for economic cooperation will not work, not least because it risks undermining the single market. Third, we also discussed the timetable for further negotiations. The moment of truth for Brexit negotiations will be the October European Council. In October, we expect maximum progress and results in the Brexit talks. Then we will decide whether conditions are there to call an extraordinary summit in November to finalise and formalise the deal.
Well, that doesn't sound hugely negative, Brian. And in fact, I believe that what we're seeing in the British press and from the British side is a complete charade. It's play acting.
The whole thing is play acting.
Absolutely,
the whole thing is play acting.
And we are going to see this meeting in October, and we will see another meeting in November. And as just with the previous deadlines, the cat will be pulled out of the bag at the last minute, and to great fanfare, and it's going to be fantastic for everybody. And ultimately, we're going to end up with a second referendum, probably, on the final deal. That's just what I think is going to happen. But the British press going nuts then over Donald Tusk's sort of ribbing of Theresa May on Instagram when he pushed out a picture of himself and Theresa. He's handing Theresa some cakes, and he's saying, a piece of cake, perhaps. Sorry, no cherries. So she's not getting a cherry on top. But the British media going nuts over this. This is really insulting to Britain. It's appalling. Theresa May's being made a fool of, and it's all just a charade. But Brian, you're asking about who is pulling her strings. Well, of course, it's this man, Ollie Robbins, Theresa May's handler. The Chequers plan is his plan. Principal private secretary to the Prime Minister from 2006 to 2007. That was Blair, then Brown. Then he became Director of Intelligence, Security and Resilience for the Cabinet Office. Then he became Deputy Director, National Security Advisor, Deputy National Security Advisor for the Cabinet Office, Director General of the Civil Service, Deputy Permanent Secretary for the Home Office, Permanent Secretary for the Department for Exiting the European Union, and now he is Theresa May's handler on EU matters since September last year, and he succeeded Oliver Letwin. So, Brian, you suggested that she is merely a tool of the deep state. Here is the deep state right in front of you at the moment. This is who is pulling her strings. It's his speech. She is incapable of reading it.
Yeah.
Not much more to say on that.
Yeah, I don't think I can say any more on that one.
Right. David Scott, welcome to the programme. Do you have any thoughts on what we just covered?
I don't think I've ever seen a more uncomfortable or awkward looking Prime Minister. She seemed embarrassed. She's been giving a script, sure, but I don't think even she believes a word that's in it. And this is the thing, that there's no conviction. There's nothing authentic. And as a political narrative, it just looks ridiculous. I thought she was embarrassed.
Yeah. Okay.
I take on board what you've said, David, but what an incredible statement that is, that a woman who is standing up in front of the eyes of the world, betraying her country, is a bit embarrassed.
Hmm. Yes. Right. Roussi?
Well, this piece of video, we'll bring in David Ellis to talk us through this. But if we get back to the whole European Union, the whole project, where did it come from? We are now starting to get down into the detail of what created this beast political system. And what better place to start than this lady telling us about what she encountered in documents from 1948.
We withhold from you is a quotation that comes from a cabinet document of the 4th of January 1948. 4th of January 1948, in which the British Foreign Secretary Labour Minister Clement Attlee told his cabinet that he thought there should be a defence treaty and a European Affairs Committee should be created. And the task of this European Affairs Committee should be to coordinate the working out of political practical measures for giving effect to the general policy of promoting political and economic integration of Western Europe under four heads: political, defence and security, publicity and propaganda, and economic. This is the earliest document that I can find that actually proposes European cooperation and integration. Clement Attlee, British Prime Minister. I haven't found an...
Right, so this is remarkable stuff. We've got Roussi, who we think is better called UC because it is so pro the European Union project. They are getting very excited and they're boasting that they found these critical documents from 1948 where this deception was being put together. I've taken that lady's talk and I've just summarised the key bits that she talked through. So it was a defence treaty and a European Affairs Committee to coordinate the working out of political practical measures for giving effect for general policy of promoting and political and economic integration of Western Europe under four heads: political, defence and security, publicity and propaganda. We'll come back to that. Economic. This is the model. This has come out of deep state in Britain. David Ellis, you were the first one to pick up on this. This is really an incredible piece of video.
It is, because it lays out exactly the insertion point into our government of who, how, why, where and when all of this started. So it's the very core of the issue that we're trying to deal with. And it tells you in no uncertain terms what the tasks were, what was set up, what was designated, the committees, and all under the strapline of integrate. So you can see there that the engine room of our government was tasked to integrate and do this work. So the offices and the appointments on that basis since 1948. So the questions we've got to ask now are, what exactly on from this point? What was it the Churchill government was talking about when it was saying, well, we should be in this, but we shouldn't be in this? You know, we should talk to them, but not be in it. What did they know? Why didn't they undo it if there was something there that was a problem that they were concerned about? Why has all this been asleep for how many decades? So these are the questions. So my stumbling block with this is we can actually see the insertion point that the EU come in and started busily beavering away in the engine room of our government and Whitehall. So on the democratic end, because we've got this variance with the EU is a non-elected dictatorship that's seeking to be armed with our stuff. So regardless of who you voted for, regardless of any party manifesto one way or the other, regardless of referenda, and whatever you thought you voted or whatever party you thought you were in or whatever you wanted or didn't want, this thing appears to be, from what this lady is saying, has been doing it since 1948.
Yeah.
And there's the crux of the matter. And you can see in there the fundamentals, the building blocks of how this thing would work. The media and propaganda was a key. Defence and security was a key. So now we know why Dave Barmby has got what he's got in 72, because it was our own government that were creating the propaganda, which is exactly what we're seeing now.
David Scott.
Isn't that fascinating? I mean, this is the four horsemen of the European apocalypse. This is political defence, economic and propaganda. Right? That made the top line, propaganda. Where's the propaganda coming from? Well, it's the BBC, it's the state broadcasters all across the country. It's European organisations who are now set up to counter Russian fake news. There is quite clearly a propaganda effort. And 1948, there's so many things tracked back to that. We were transformed into a socialist country then, almost overnight in 1948. And of course, it's still praised to the heavens. And at that point, there was no way back. So the changes were made. And I remember seeing many years ago, I need to try and track this down, a piece about the Churchill government that came in after the Attlee government, 1951. And when it was clear that that was on the way, there was some pressure applied to the incoming Conservatives that you won't reverse the basic changes that have been made. And if you don't agree to that, then, and there was some sort of threat that would be revolution, right? And the Conservatives yielded to this and left every major change in place and just moderated it a little bit and got the economy out of the, they managed to end rationing and things like this and get the economy out of the mess it was in. So, and this has been the pattern ever since, a ratchet effect. So we go more and more to this, to a socialist state, and then the Conservatives come in and stabilise things, and then the next move is made, and on it goes. But nothing's ever reversed. No changes are made. Nothing fundamental is allowed to be altered. And that seems to have been a deal that was done right back with Winston Churchill.
David, the other thing that comes into my mind is Edward Heath. We know the evidence is now on the table that this man, that man was an abuser of children. And of course, this makes him an ideal candidate for pushing through the dirty deeds of getting us fully into the European Union, because he could be blackmailed to do so. And I don't think our security forces could possibly claim they didn't know, which means we're really dealing with a deep state. What have we got coming? I think it's a dictatorship. And I think you've got some more video here, which you're very curious about.
Yes, this was taken in Perth by me last weekend. Now, the traffic was stopped, the police car blocked the road, and so there was a parade coming. And it was the Black Watch homecoming parade, which I've seen examples of before. But this is what we got. This is a combat patrol. You see the soldiers there doing 360-degree situational awareness. The vehicles went through with 50 cal machine guns, and the soldier holding on to the gun as though he was about to open up. So this happened here before there was a band and a couple of companies marching, and then there was another simulated combat patrol at the back end of the thing. So we've got these soldiers have all got camouflage paint, face paint on. There's specialist snipers. There's guys carrying Milan anti-tank rockets. You know, this is a very, very strange thing to see going through the streets of your hometown. Now, I looked back at the 2012 homecoming parade in Perth, and it was soldiers marching and bands playing. And the key thing was the reaction of the public. In 2012, there was spontaneous applause. There was cheers and shouts of support when the band played the Black Bear. The crowd erupted at the appropriate moment with a cheer. It was a party atmosphere. This parade went through in silence, right? The crowd, the citizens of Perth clearly felt intimidated. It was an extremely strange sight.
David Ellis, it reminded me of Belfast in many ways.
Agree entirely. That's not a town or city parade. What you're witnessing there is a occupational active service force. And all you need to know that that is the case is look at the people on the pavements. They are busily walking away because they know it's not right. They're not standing and watching. They're not accepting what is happening. The people are busily walking away. It's all you need to know. I mean, that is really the oddest thing I've seen in this country. It's just, you know, who on earth signed off on this and said that this is what you would do? Because that is an active service occupational force.
And that is the question being asked in the chat box. Who signed off on this, Brian?
Well, a guess from me would be, don't forget, we've got Capita at the moment, which is single-handedly destroying recruiting for the military, but they're in charge of recruiting for the military. So my question is, could it be that this was another zany idea from Capita, who thought this would be good for recruiting? Whereas, as you say, David Ellis, you could see people very wary of this and walking away from it. I think possibly Capita's got something to do with this. Yeah. Well, look, let's move on through the European Union project and just remind ourselves of a few things. We've now got that baseline of 1948. And what are we starting to see? Treason unfolding within UK. Here's Monnet himself. Let's have a look at what he was saying, that basically Europe's nations should be guided towards the superstate without their people understanding. That wasn't some throwaway comment. That was this man in a very calculated way deciding how the project was to be brought in by deceit. And we can see this sort of thing right at the beginning. But let's come back to the propaganda. And we're going to thank David Barmby for a lot of this information. Here is the actual Memorandum of Association for the European Movement of the United Kingdom. As altered by a special resolution passed 23rd of February 1977 and 23rd of April 2015. What do we want to focus on? Well, some of the stuff here. To organise conferences and public discussions, to arrange for panels of lecturers and debaters drawn from members of Parliament and others to address meetings, to entertain distinguished foreign statesmen, set up support and maintain committees and other organisations and bodies. This is all to help apply psychology to get British people to get interested in the project. But then have a look at this. Now, this is from the Articles of Associations, to undertake educational and social propaganda and other activities. So remarkable. That word is used back in 1948. And here we see it in the European Union's own documentation, complete with
definition.
A definition. Thanks, Mike. So it's pretty clear that this is a deceitful political agenda, and it's going to use propaganda, it's going to use mind control in order to drum this into people's minds. This is one of the slides we used when we were speaking to Dave Barmby himself. We'll have a look at him in just a few seconds. What have we got here? Well, we got the men in suits helping to set all this stuff up. But one of the things that David talked about was that back in 1973, how utter deceit and propaganda in all these areas was used in order to get the European Union project in place, deceiving people by all of these things, letter writing campaigns, using the BBC propaganda. And when we put this slide up previously, of course, we haven't had the EU referendum in 2016. We were saying, are the same things going to be used? Well, of course, we can put a big tick in the box there, because all the same sorts of propaganda and deception were used in the referendum. Even so, the vote got through. But many, many people say that the number of people who voted for out was much greater than 17.4 million. So here was the UK column in June 2016, really warning and saying, is there going to be a fair and transparent referendum? And will that be adhered to? Well, of course, it wasn't. I'm going to say thank you to the people in the chat box who are actually saying the UK column got it right back then. Just have a look at this article from Liberty very quickly. The Cameron deception, associate membership of the EU. We also put this up at the time. The foundations are in place for David Cameron and George Osborne to deceive the British people into believing this new two-tier structure. The truth is there's no renegotiation, none. There are no negotiations going on. There's no sitting around a table. It's not happening. And Mike, you were absolutely on the button with this. But this was an article back from 2016 as well. Somebody predicting that there was not going to be change. And the other thing we warned about was all of this false network of organisations supposedly battling each other to leave the European Union. Here's the man himself, Dave Barmby. We did an interview with Dave in the UK column studio. His book is available on Amazon and other places. It's very short, it's very sharp, it's full of factual evidence and documents showing the deception of the European Union. And if you want to see some of that, if you like, in a video footage, then go to the address at the top of the screen and you can see the full interview we did with Dave Barmby. It's pretty obvious what's going on, Mike, I think.
Yes. Now, David, one of the things we've been talking about for a long time is the shutdown of alternative narratives. David Scott, this is. And you wanted to highlight this document, Alternative Influence Broadcasting the Reactionary Right on YouTube. This is from, who is the wonderful think tank that has put this together?
That's a good question. The actual author is quite obscure now, having kind of scrubbed her social media profile. I wonder why. This is a think tank, and the thing I wanted to highlight here was there's a couple of issues. One, the reactionary right. Now, what this report, if you delve into it, makes clear is the reactionary right is actually everybody who's not a social justice warrior. And they actually define it as this. So it's SJWs and anti-SJWs is how they define it. So SJWism, which is cultural Marxism, you know, political correct culture, closing down any debate, and anybody who opposes that on any basis, for any political standpoint whatsoever, is now being defined as the reactionary right. And the other thing is this wonderful little diagram which illustrates exactly all the links between them. And it's this big network and it's very scary. And then you've got everybody on there, right? You've got—
I didn't see us on there.
But we're not trying hard enough. Right. You've got Sargon of Akkad, who's liberal and extremely moderate and slightly left-wing. You've got Stefan Molyneux, who runs the largest website in the world dealing with philosophy. You've got Stephen Crowther, who's an American-Canadian conservative comedian and TV show host. You've got Colin Robertson, Millennial Lows, whose program we've been on. So you've got this, and then there's journalists, there's Jordan Peterson, academics, basically anybody who on any basis has said anything against the there is only one answer, you will think the way we tell you to think approach that comes from the authoritarian left is now being targeted for suppression. This is a document outlining what they're going to censor. And what they're going to censor is most certainly diverse. It's diverse opinion that they're looking at, right? They're going to censor everything that doesn't comply with how you're forced to think.
Okay, and they're going to censor political voices that they don't like in Europe, but using the psychiatric system to do so. Now, I'm not a fan of Marine Le Pen as such, but to sort of suggest that the fact that she was trying to highlight jihadi terrorism in the Middle East, posting some posts on Twitter, requires her then to undergo psychiatric tests. In France, this is a bit unusual, isn't it?
This is just remarkable. The quote from this article, 50-year-old national rally leader who sits in France's National Assembly was charged with circulating messages that, quote, incite terrorism or pornography or seriously harm human dignity, end quote. She was stripped of parliamentary immunity in November last year. We reported on that. And on Thursday, Ms. Le Pen used a Twitter account to post copies of a court order ordering her to undergo psychiatric evaluation. The document's dated 11 September, interesting date, calls for tests to be carried out as soon as possible to establish whether, quote, she is capable of understanding remarks and answering questions. So there you go. You have a different political view. You are literally insane, and we will check you out. And, well, it's very obviously Soviet, isn't it?
But she wasn't insane in the past.
Well, this is it. This is, she was... Her erudition and precision in how she was explaining her case, whether you agree with it or not, was actually impressing this writer here. Now, this is a James Trubb is a left-wing writer who's speaking from a point of opposing everything that's populist, opposing Trump, and calling, at least superficially, for people to listen to ideas that they object to or they oppose in order to maintain the right sort of mindset where you will consider all aspects of a problem before coming to a view and be able to maintain a dialogue with those who don't agree with you. This is all being swept away now because, well, we'll just have to have you checked out and crushed and persecuted and prosecuted and there you go.
And if I just highlight one little bit in that report, of course, we see her stripped of parliamentary immunity. Who strips her? The judges do. So what we've got is the judges now fully in control of the political system. If they can get rid of immunity like that, they are in control of the system. And yeah, if we don't like what you say, then we can use the psychiatric gulag. You've used the word Soviet. I just want to add a little bit of a rock to that pond and say we need to think through where the Soviet system came from. And in fact, we're starting to come back into the world of psychoanalysts and the Frankfurt School. So there's something very, very dark and sinister happening here. But we're also seeing this use of mental health, the mental health gulag in the UK, to silence people who speak out about the state, or indeed if they try and protect their own children.
But David, just to end this section off, I just wanted to highlight this article in the Washington Post for anybody that wants a laugh. The writer saying, I wanted to understand Europe's populism, so I talked to Bono. Now, would you go to Bono for advice on this?
This is, you talk to the guy who mocks the populism, right, by projecting a satanic face onto his face and doing mock Nazi salutes. That's the guy you talk to. Dear me. Just to close off on the Marie Le Pen, a final quote from her. For having condemned Daesh's horrors and tweets, the justice system is putting me through psychiatric tests. Just how far will they go?
Well, they will go to sectioning is where they will go. Right, so let's move back on to the subject of defence. And I'm going to say this is something else that the UK column absolutely predicted was going to happen, because now we're starting to see the pieces move on the chessboard to close down Britain's nuclear facilities. Devonport Dockyard, largest naval base in Europe, absolutely vast, now almost no ships. But what have we got? Devonport Dockyard's nuclear facilities no longer fit for purpose. And if you get into this article, suddenly there's a problem with 13 nuclear sites across the UK. They're very worried. We seem to have made a bit of a mistake in the past and they haven't been maintained properly, Mike. So they're falling apart now. And, well, what are we going to do? We're going to have to rationalise. We're going to have to privatise. We're going to have to shut them down. David Ellis, this is absolutely driving into the EU military unification. This is where Britain is stripped of its nuclear deterrent capability and the whole machinery is handed to France.
Exactly. That's, yes, it's being done piecemeal. It's You look at all the other facets that they're engaged in doing this. Obviously, we now know that they're busily engaged in media and propaganda. And at the one hand, you've then got them busily engaged in destroying a national state asset here at Devonport, where, of course, how convenient. Oh, well, that's now no use. And we won't be doing that anymore. We don't really want the submarines anyway. Why don't we just let the EU have it all? You know, that's fine. Oh, you can pay, though. You can pay the bill. Oh, yes, we're going to tax you as well. All right. That's brilliant. OK, where is the public outcry with this? You know, memo to Brexit, everyone. Gang up, get into your MP and get on this. I mean, you know, how much more blatant do we have to be?
Yep, David, we understand your frustration there and I totally support what you're saying. I have to give a wry smile, of course, because Plymouth Devon MP Gary Streeter simply doesn't want to know. He says that any time the mainstream media report the close down of military infrastructure, the scrapping of warships, this is all effectively fake news and he doesn't want to deal with it. So get in and see those MPs, but some of them, I think, have become, I'm not sure what the word is, brain dead.
Yeah, but if they're brain dead, you need to go in and waken them up again.
Waken them up, yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Don't worry, David, because, we may be closing down Devonport and getting rid of our military, but we're still creating an enemy, at least in the minds of people, whether it's a real enemy or not. And here we are, another day and another incident. Yesterday, RAF, the Quick Reaction Alert Typhoon fighter aircraft scrambled from RAF Lossiemouth to monitor two Russian planes approaching UK airspace. These are Blackjack aircraft, apparently. This is the codename for them, long-range bombers. They were not talking to air traffic control, and so that was making them a hazard to all other aviation, apparently. Oh. And so we had to deal with that. The RAF work closely with NATO partners to monitor the jets as they pass through a variety of international airspace. I'm not clear that there is a variety of international airspace. I assume it was
international or it's not.
But anyway, a variety of international airspace before they were intercepted by the RAF over the North Sea. Subsequently, our fighters escorted the Blackjacks north out of UK's area of interest. At no time did the Russian bombers enter UK sovereign airspace. So the RAF quick reaction alert was launched because the Russian military aircraft, they say, were not talking to air traffic agencies. But then they go on to say, this is a really serious thing, and if you've listened to everything I've said, this is clearly very serious. But then they say the RAF routinely intercept, identify and escort Russian aircraft. So really, it's nothing at all.
Well, they have been doing this for the last 40-odd years, Mike, so this is pure hype.
Absolutely. Well, let's get the ultimate in hype then, because here is Gav the Chav, the Secretary of State for War, who had this to say. Russian bombers probing UK airspace. They didn't probe UK airspace. They were in international airspace. Is another reminder of the very serious military challenge that Russia poses us today, which is why we're closing down Devonport Dockyard. No, he didn't say that, but this is the irony of the whole thing. We will not hesitate to continually defend our skies from acts of aggression. Once again, the rapid reactions of our RAF have demonstrated how vital our armed forces are in protecting Britain. Yes, I'm not sure what he's been smoking.
Well, he's not in the real world, but he's been a very busy boy, because not only is he talking about the Russians flying near our airspace, apparently we've got an extra 250 million has just been found. We're broke. We don't have any money for any public services, but we've just magicked up 250 million for a new cyber force. I think this is going to multiply our cyber people by four. So it's going to help the government combat terrorists and criminal gangs amid increased security risks from Russia and ISIS. This was some of the detail. Thousands of recruits, as well as experts from the military and security services, will make a new unit. Yeah, here it is, quadrupling the number of UK cyber agents, except GCHQ and the military are apparently squabbling over who will be in charge. But the good news is the creation of the force will allow them to tackle ISIS, Islamic State, including Syria and Iraq, gangs, people traffickers and paedophile rings from their base, which will either be located at RAF Witten in Cambridgeshire or Mod Corsham. So I read that several times because I thought you don't really mean the paedophiles are based in those two places. But what a joke. We've got MI5 now proven in the mainstream press to have withheld information about paedophiles in Westminster. So these people won't be investigating. I'll bring this one in. This is going back a little bit now to July, but a really fantastic article where The Independent is showing that the arms and the munitions and the bombs and the missiles being used in Syria are actually just coming out of the Western military industrial complex that's coming from Hughes and Lockheed's and the rest of it. Very detailed article. And then they are pointing out that these weapons are going to the so-called soft rebels who are then handing them on to the bad guys like Al Nusra. Here's the head of GCHQ. He says that Russia's involvement in cyber warfare shows how little Russia cares for the rules-based international order. Theresa May used that expression in the video we heard a few minutes ago. Here's Jeremy Fleming. He says, though, that we've been working very hard for over 20 years spying on the Russians and their capability. I've added, but we've sat on our fat backsides until now doing nothing. Mm. So utter hypocrisy. And we're to believe this man doesn't know who's really creating the terror and wars. And before we hand over to David Scott, because I know he's got an important end piece for us today, this is on the BBC website. I found this utterly disgusting. The BBC is interviewing these two men. It says that they've allied themselves with an Al-Qaeda linked group, which means they're terrorists, according to GCHQ and MI6 and COBRA. So the BBC talking to two terrorists. It also goes on to say that that terrorist group has been accused of torture. And then when this journalist, Quinton Somerville, starts his conversation with them, he talks about them as foreign fighters. I found this really obscene, Mike. I phoned the BBC to ask them to explain it. And they said, well, go away because we're the BBC and this is journalism.
That was not journalism. I strongly recommend people go and have a look for that little video clip. I don't know if people in the US will be able to watch it, but anybody in the UK, go and watch it, because it was not journalism. This was not some kind of hard-hitting interview with two jihadists. This was
free airtime.
It was a puff piece. It was a puff piece. David Ellis, just before we go to David Scott, what are your thoughts?
Well, the propaganda machine's on full throttle, isn't it? And we're seeing the contrast in propaganda now with all this nonsense with being tagged in and around young Gavin there. Let's be realistic. The Russians are not bothered at all about the European fighter. I mean, this is the reveal, of course, isn't it? You know, that they're, you know, as you rightly said, they've been doing this for decades, doing this, these patrols. This is nothing new. But of course, the European fighter is nothing but a flying computer. It's not an English Electric P1. It's nothing like that. And of course, the Russians are not bothered about it at all. This is a nonsense. It's nothing but a European Airbus, Jagd Flugzeug, or whatever the hell the now parent company's called, or something or other. You know, if we actually had a government and it was sincere, what we would have is a Vulcan 3. And if the Russians were a problem, then they would be worried about that. But we don't have that. So this is all a complete nonsense. It's a dog and pony show. And, you know, this cozying up that we see every 2 minutes with Gavin Williamson and all the other ministers there. One day they're cozying up to troops and the next day they're off doing nonsense like this. You know, it's abhorrent. It's just, you know, they're a disgrace to their offices, you know, and we need to out them.
Thank you for that.
OK, let's move on then. David, what's Ruth Davidson been up to?
Well, we're returning to mental health issues. Right. The Scottish Conservative leader, Ruth Davidson, has revealed that she's self-harmed and had suicidal thoughts as a teenager. The Guardian here reports that Davidson is pregnant with her first child, talked about going into a total tailspin after a boy she knew killed himself. At 17, she said she started hurting herself, punching walls, cutting her stomach and arms with blades or broken glass. When she was 18, she was diagnosed with clinical depression. She explicitly ruled out ever being leader of the Conservatives, despite frequently being tipped for the position. Asked if she would ever run, Davidson said, "No, I value my relationship and my mental health too much for it. I will not be a candidate." Her openness, quote, openness and frankness have been met with praise by psychiatrists, politicians and mental health campaigners. Now, this all comes from a book she's writing. And I warn you, there might be a lot of violent cringing, because the book's title is Yes, She Can. So here we have the Barack Obama and feminism combined in one non-conservative book, I would think. This was hugely praised by the psychiatric profession, hugely praised by most of the political world, apart from one or two nasties like James Dornan, who chose to praise her, then attack her. And it actually raises quite interesting issues, which have been very slow to be examined. The first of these is she talked about her suicidal thoughts, right? And she talked about the treatment she got. Now, the treatment she got was she was put on pills, and the pills made her worse. And when she went back to the doctor and complained about the pills, they upped the dose. And then that's where the suicidal thoughts started coming in. And so one of the messages here is that the care she got from the NHS and from the psychiatric profession was not good. And she got through this by modifying how she goes about thinking and organizing her time and her day, and she battled through this, and you know, more power to her elbow for doing that.
And
now,
David,
the next question.
Oh, go ahead. Yes, sorry. Am I right? Beg your pardon. Am I right in saying that basically people have been saying that if she's suffering this amount of mental health distress, she should be observed by social services if she's starting a family?
Well, we've got that slide. Have we? We may do. If not, I'll read it out to you. Now, the next question it raises is, she's saying that it'd be too stressful to be Prime Minister, but she wants to be First Minister of Scotland. That seems a little bit strange. She says there's no contradiction, and it's essentially because this is where home is, and her support system and relatives and partner and all the rest of our are, and to go to London and take that more stressful job on would be a problem. So it's not entirely without logic, but it does seem at least a little bit on the surface contradictory. But the most important thing actually came on Twitter. Now, someone said, let me just enlarge this slightly, Ruth Davidson has spoken out on pregnancy and fears of depression returning. All good, I think, for mental health issues, but in totalitarian ScotGov Scotland, where normal pregnant mums are assessed by Shinari toolkit, this kind of health exchange would carry the risk of the baby being taken into care. Now, to that, Maggie Mellon, who is an extremely experienced social worker, responded, yes, it would definitely merit a pre-birth assessment by a social worker, with the possibility of a pre-birth case conference. That's now standard. Right, so the person here, D. Cooper, replied, so if it's not going to happen to Ruth Davidson, and we know for the fact that we are hurtling towards the totalitarian state that the Supreme Court alluded to in the ruling on ScotGov's named person. So this is absolutely spot on, because she has revealed serious mental health issues and concerns over whether having a baby might cause them to return. But she's immune, right? She's a powerful person in the public eye with political power. Social services will not come after her, but they'll come after ordinary women all across Scotland. and they'll investigate them and study them and have case conferences about them. And if they're not satisfied, arrange to take their children away. So the people who are making these laws are immune. It doesn't affect them. It affects the rest of us. Now, that was tweeted at Ruth Davidson, and she's not responded. She's not responded to that. And I really feel that she should. Has social services been in contact over this? If not, why not? If not, will she speak up for the people who are in the same position but lack her political power and are therefore targets?
David, we will spend some more time on this subject because we're seeing more and more of the psychiatric system being used as a political weapon, and of course social services fully involved with that. Let's just end on this remarkable note. Chatham House, I'm going to smile as I say this, Chatham House tweeted out this: Brexit can and must be stopped democratically. There we are. That's you can freeze the screen and have a look at this. Well, I thought that was just wonderful. Dave Ellis, I know you wanted to talk a bit more about Chatham House, but we've run out of time. But what a wonderful, this is an organisation that meets and has discussions behind closed doors where you can't say who said what. But they say Brexit must be stopped democratically. These people are very dangerous.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for anybody that's interested, there's a meeting taking place with Nye Griffith at the Labour Party on a what I understand is a fringe event. You can find it on her lead tweet if you look on her Twitter feed. I suggest anybody that's able would go and just see exactly what these people are really discussing. But I mean, how much more abhorrent can you get? You know, we need to stop Brexit democratically. We've had the vote. The vote was leave. End of debate.
Yeah, it's brilliant stuff, isn't it? Gentlemen, we must end there. Thank you very much for joining us. A big thank you to our viewers and listeners today. And would like to say that if you're not a subscriber to UK Column, please consider subscribing. We can only do what we do with your financial help. If you're able just to make a donation, that would be much appreciated. We can see that the British government is now really putting alternative media in the sights, and that is for total state censorship, to close down any dissenting views. We need your support to keep going. What can you do aside from help us in a financial sense? Well, promote the material, encourage friends and others to have a look at what we're talking about. Don't believe us, check what we say. But many people today saying, thank you, UK Column, you warned us about this, the Brexit deception, way back when there was talk about a referendum. Thanks again. We'll be back at the same time on Monday. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.